Record on this computer. Okay, so you know what? Those people with the video, they missed just a little bit. It'll be okay. I'm recording now. We are in Chapter 4, Section D. We're talking about credit cards. So yes, credit card companies are very aware. They're always marketing. They're always offering you. And see, because you made this big payment towards your vacation, you looked like a great candidate, and everybody wanted you to get a credit card from them. And you know, there are good reasons to use credit cards. You mentioned trying to build your credit history, and that's really a big deal. When you're young, there is nothing more frustrating than the fact that you can't get a credit card that has any better than, like, you know, 21% interest rate or something on it. My oldest son has found himself in that situation now. He's got a master's degree in nuclear engineering. I promise you, he's making much more money than I am. He will always make more money than I am. And yet, he goes, Mom, I know you guys just throw away credit card offers for 0% interest for a year and a half. And he goes, what's the best interest thing that I can get? 21%. And it's just all about credit history. I said, well, you know, when you've got gray hair, you'll be able to get a good rate also. So there is something about building that credit history, and it does help you to get some better offers. You just have to be real disciplined about it. Okay, so you get your minimum monthly payment. You're going to make a monthly payment. And it, you know, if you only make the minimum, you're basically just covering your interest, and your principal is still sitting there. So it's going to have interest again next month and next month. It's really hard to get it paid off. Here's their example. You have $2,300 on your charge account. It's a 21% interest rate card, which to me looks outrageous, but my son would say, yeah, it's the best they could get. If you decide, I'm going to quit using this credit card, and I'm going to get it paid off in a year. Okay, so I'm not going to charge anything else. How big of a payment is it going to take for me to pay it off in a year? Well, that's what the payment formula is for. All right, my principal is at $2,300. My APR is 0.21. I'm making monthly payments, so my N is 12. I drop all these numbers in where they go on the formula. Don't forget the negative sign. It's important. And I find out that I've got to pay $214.16 each month in order to get it paid off in a year. Yeah, will the credit card company be sad if I don't pay it off? Oh, no, they'll be happy. More interest for them, okay? So now let's try this one, okay? If I've got a $3,200 balance, my APR is 19%, and I'm going to do it for 2 years, okay? I'm going to do it for 2 years. Then what payment do I need so that I can pay this thing off across 2 years? I think I wrote this in my notes. I've got to make certain because, again, it's going to go away on me as soon as I go to my calculator. Yes, I have this one in my notes. All right, so I am going to go to a different screen so that we can see the calculator. There it is. Our old friend is back. You can go ahead and calculate at home. Don't wait on me. I'm a little bit slow. Bringing my technology and all. I'll clear out our last problem. Whoops. Clear out the last problem.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
So N is 12 because you can only make 12 payments in 1 year, correct?
I mean, the credit card company would let you make extra payments. There's no penalty for that, but we're assuming you're making one payment a year.
A month.
That's the assumption that I am making, okay? $3,200 times... My APR was it 19%? Is that true, I think? Oh, you can't see the slide anymore anyway. We're going with 19%. Monthly payment, so N is 12. All of that over 1 minus parentheses 1 plus. There's my 19% again, 0.19 over 12. And then up here in my exponent, I have negative I'm going to do it for 2 years. I'm not going to pay it off in a year. I'm going to take 2 years. So my Y is 2 and my N is 12. All right. So I'm going to be an exponent of negative 24. So here is the calculation that I want to do. There's where I've put every one of the numbers. Does that make sense to you with what you saw on the formula? Anybody have a question about how I substituted these numbers? Because in a minute they're going to disappear and I'm going to put them in the calculator. All right, so now here I go with my calculator. I need to put in a fraction. The first thing, I'm going to start with my fraction. And in the top of my fraction, I have 3,200 times. I can put the times sign. I don't have to. I can just go straight to my parentheses. Those of you that remember algebra, remember that. The rest of you, just put in your times sign if you don't like that. Then I need another fraction because I've got APR over N. So 0.19 divided by 12. Then I'm ready to close that. Whoops. Close that parenthesis. Okay. I'm ready for the denominator of my fraction, where I need 1 subtract parenthesis 1 plus. I do not see my plus. Try that again. Plus, there we go. Another fraction, APR over N, so 0.19 divided by 12. Then I want to close this parenthesis. And then I need to raise to an exponent, so I use my exponent key. And I have negative 2. And on my calculator, they don't like the minus sign being used as a negative, but I don't see another choice, so I'm going to try it. Negative 2 times 12. All right. And that's everything. I am now done. And so I get an answer of $161.31. That's going to be the monthly payment that I have to make in order to pay this off in 2 years. Okay? So we did all of this and we found out my payment is going to be $161.31 if I round to the nearest penny. Okay, so then I want to know, well, what's this whole loan going to cost? What's it costing me? What did all this cost me? I have to figure out my total payments. So I have a payment of $161.31. Okay, which I do each month times 12 months in a year. Okay, times 2 years for the life of this loan or to get it paid off, okay? And so my months cancel out, my years cancel out. I've just got dollars. Total cost for me is going to be $3,871.38. Okay, so I had $3,200. That was my balance on my credit card. And if I pay it back in 2 years, if I'm going to have paid $3,871.38. And so if I find the difference between those two, then I know that that represents the interest that I have paid. Okay, so I'm just going to subtract. I paid $671.38 in interest. And for a lot of people paying it off in 2 years, that would be a really good accomplishment. Okay. So that's what it would take. That's how I figure it out. Once I have my payment, figuring out total cost, you got to remember you're making a payment every month. And how many years are you going to do that for? All right. on the test on the last night of class, I am much more likely to just give you the payment and then ask you to tell me the total cost and how much interest accrued. I'd like to know that you can do those calculations and see your way to the end. All right. Before I erase, anybody want to shout out? Any questions or comments about this calculation? All right, then I want you, while I'm erasing, to move to page 251 and look at question 28. A pen. There. Page 251, number 28. Okay, that's what I want you to be reading and thinking about while I kind of get my board organized to talk about this problem. In fact, you know what? I'm going to change my mind. Sorry. In the interest of time, we're going to skip that one. Go to 38. There we go. Go to 38, which might take you to the next page. I don't know. No, it's still there. Comparing loan options, okay? Both of these loans are fixed rate. Both of them have the same closing costs, all right? So those two things are equal. Both of them have monthly payments, all right? So we want to look at number 38, a principal of $75,000. And we've got two options, a 30-year option and a 15-year option, okay? So in both situations, our principal, I think it's this principal. Forgive me if I misspelled. Okay, our principal is $75,000. We want to figure out in both of these situations, the 30 years and the 15, okay? So over here, we'll calculate when we go for 30 years. And over here, we'll calculate when we go for 15. Okay. Then we want to compare the total cost, the monthly payment. How much difference does it make to my monthly payment? And then how much difference does it make to my total cost? All right. The APR, the longer you take it out, okay, the higher your APR. So over here, your APR is 8%. And over here, the APR is going to be 7.
That's interesting to me that it's two times the amount of time, but only one percentage point less.
Yes. They're not going to double your percentage rate. Nobody would go for it. It's just always slightly higher. And really, when you think about it, okay, anytime somebody loans me money over a long period of time, none of us have a crystal ball. None of us have a guarantee, okay? In most of, we don't know for sure. We think we know what life's going to look like. We think we know what our financial situation is going to look like. We think we can pay this off. But things could change drastically, all right? Think about all the places in the world right now where people have just had to run away with whatever what they could carry and flee not only their house, but their city and maybe even their nation. They might have had some debts back there. They might have been paying on that house, and now they don't even have a house, okay? And they don't have a job, and they don't have anything. So, we're, you know, in the U.S., we live such a stable life. We don't always think about it. And even in the U.S., certainly things happen. There's a lot of people in Detroit sitting with houses that aren't worth much of anything, and they still have loans on them, you know, where the economy has taken a bad turn. So the longer out they extend it to me to try to, you know, protect themselves, they raise the interest rate a little bit, and then remember they're front-loading that interest. So even if my life takes a bad turn and I default on my loan, they don't come out too badly in the deal, okay? Because they can, they already got a lot of interest out of it. So the longer I extend it out, the higher the interest rate is. Okay, so we want to compare and see, how much difference does this really make? Because a lot of times with house loans, in particular with mortgages, you're choosing between 30 years and 15 years, okay? Now, most of the time, we're borrowing more than $75,000, to be honest, but we'll look at a very conservative one. All right, so first I need to calculate my payment. And remember that the payment formula
is not a lot of fun. Okay, payment equals,
in both of these, it's going to be $75,000
because we're taking out the principal,
the same principal every time.
And then we're going to have our APR, which is different for the two. So I'm just going to put in APR. We're making
monthly payments either way, so the 12 goes there. In the denominator, I am going to have 1
subtract 1 plus, and then I've got my APR over 12 again, times,
in the exponent,
negative 12 times, and the number of years.
So in one instance, that's going to be 30.
In the other entrance,
that's going to be 15.
All right.
And then I would close up that
second set of parentheses.
So I'm going to find out what my payment is for each of these. Okay. If I put in 0.08 and 30, I'm calculating here. If I put in 0.07 and 15, I'm calculating over there. All right, so we'll make the same deal. Steve and I are going to take care of the 30-year loan numbers, and the rest of you are going to take care of the 15-year loan numbers. So I'm going to use my calculator, and this is all going to go away. So if you don't have it written down, snap a picture like any good teenager would, or write it down real quick,
okay, so that you can see
what's going on. And then I'm going to have to make it go away so I can use my calculator.
Everybody with me? Hello?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I was hoping there was life on the other side of the microphone.
I'm dead.
Okay, so I'm going to
now click and it's going to disappear. I'm sorry.
It's just how it works.
There we go. All right. Steve, you and I have 30 years, right?
Steve, am I
yes.
Interested
in myself?
Okay, you're still there. All right.
Yes.
So 70, oh, whoops, I should have first
given myself a fraction.
There's my fraction. Okay. Now I want 75,000.
One more zero, please. Okay. Times, so here's my set of parentheses
and my fraction. And we have the 8% loan, so
0.08 in the numerator
and 12
in the denominator.
We'll close our parenthesis.
And then in the denominator, 1 subtract
another parenthesis, 1 plus
another fraction. 0.08 over 12. Close that.
Then I need an exponent.
There's my exponent key.
Negative 12 times 30. I'll just put it in there.
Negative 12 times 30 is my exponent. Then I want to close my second parenthesis.
That should be everything. And I come up with a payment of $550.32. Are we good, Steve?
Well, I came up with $550.35.
Okay, not going to fuss about that. Might have been somewhere where you did some rounding or something, or that my calculator did some rounding. We're close enough. All right, so we believe that our number is 550 and 32 to 35 cents, somewhere in there. Let's go back. All right, so we've decided that this is our payment. $550.32 to 35 cents. Okay, ladies, what did you conclude your payment was if we went with the 15-year loan?
I probably didn't do it right because I got a negative number.
That's not a good sign, is it? I don't think the bank will pay us. Okay, so we're going to agree that we stopped and thought about it, and the answer was not reasonable, but she doesn't have time to do it again. So this is why you're working on a team. Somebody else on the ladies' team, what did you get for your payment?
I forgot to put in a one, so then I got $674.12.
So you already got it fixed? Man, that's quick. Sid?
Have a mouse.
I'm not very helpful because for some reason when I'm trying to divide on the Desmos, it's trying to create another dividing line underneath my APR and 12. So I'm not sure what the issue is.
Okay, so did you put your fraction in to start with before you ever started entering anything?
No.
That's what got you in trouble.
Got it.
Since this entire expression is a fraction,
yeah,
everything's either on the top or on the bottom, the first key you want to use is your A over B, and it'll make your first fraction, and it'll let you type in the top, and then when you get all this in there, you just click your cursor down in the denominator, and then it'll let you enter your denominator.
Got it.
All right, there you go. See, it's good. We can have these conversations. Saves a lot of stress later in the week.
I have a problem too because my decimal won't understand what my formula I'm trying to put in.
I'm sorry, say again.
I was saying I put in all the numbers and I tried to make it the same way that you have done it here, but my decimal doesn't understand what I'm trying to do.
Okay. Are you using a different calculator or are you trying to use Desmos?
No, I'm trying to use the Desmos.
Okay, and your decimal doesn't understand what you want to do?
No.
Did you use the exponent on the negative 12 times 15?
Yes.
So if it's up high, it looks like your exponent?
To me, it looks the same as what you have put up here, but Desmos doesn't understand what I'm trying to do.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you that, you know, now you're talking kind of about running a calculator or a computer, which means every single parenthesis, dot, comma, they all mean something. They're very picky. They're very unforgiving. So you're going to have to study absolutely stroke for stroke what I have compared to what you have. Because, again, I would pretty much guarantee there is a difference somewhere if you're getting a different answer. And it has to do with how you typed it in.
So I think I can hear the answer whenever you're ready.
You what?
I've reached the answer whenever you're ready.
Okay, all right. So we've got these two things. We got two different payments, okay? Now remember, after finding the monthly payment, we wanted to talk about total cost, okay? So, ladies, I want you to calculate your total cost. Steve and I are going to calculate the total cost over 30 years. So, Steve,
we're making this $550.
What do I need to multiply by?
We're going to multiply that by 12 and then by 30.
I agree. Because every month, and there's 12 months, and then every year, 30 years.
Conclusion.
Okay. So I have to do my payment times 12, because it's a monthly payment, times however many years I am doing it. Steve and I are going through the long haul. So our total cost is $198,000
$116.43.
Okay, now ladies, when you did yours, you had the 674, so your payment was higher. And you're making monthly payments, so you took that times 12, but then you got to multiply by 15, whereas we had to multiply by 30. So what did you get when you did all of that?
Okay, wait, I just realized I didn't have a payment of 674.12. My payment came out to 716.74, so I guess I did something wrong.
Something went a little bit wrong somewhere. If you're trying to do it, you know, like a piece at a time, you know, instead of putting it all in at one time, then every time you round, you create error. And so if we do a calculation and we round, and then we do another calculation and we round, then we're going to keep being less and less accurate. Okay. So if you're trying to do it piece by piece or a step at a time, you really have to hang on to all the decimals.
Okay. In order to get an accurate calculation.
So if we went with the payment of $674.12, I got $121,341.40.
And how many cents?
40.
Okay, well, I have 82, but again, who's going to argue about the pennies, all right? We're looking at the dollars here. So, very good. Now, look how much difference there is in the total cost. If this is my house, the difference between these two numbers, if you subtract those two numbers, 121,000, 198,000, what do you get?
$77,000 or thereabouts.
Okay, you know, approximately. I'll keep little wavy lines. Approximately. $70,000 difference. More than what my principal was to start with. Okay? I have like bought the house another time again by going with this longer loan. So when people advise you, Dave Ramsey talks about this, you know, shortest possible loan time you can get is going to save you a whole lot of money in the end. If you initially, when you buy your house, just don't have it, this is all the payment you can do, that's it. Then if your financial circumstances improve and you can make a larger payment, make a larger payment and tell them to apply it to your principal. Everything you pay over your payment, you can tell them, don't pay more interest, pay on my principal. Okay, I'm paying you extra and I want you to apply it to my principal. So that you at least begin to approach these better numbers. If you're super early in your loan, you might even want to refinance. But you see the significant difference that it can make. Those years are costing you money, okay? So we stand out to lower our payment, but in doing that, we're actually paying more. And this is so counterintuitive, it's hard for most people to understand and think about when they're in there signing those papers and making those decisions. But, you know, when the car salesman is making the car affordable for you, you know, and he really seems like he's your best friend and he's helping you out, but he's signing you up to pay more for that car, quite a lot more, because you're making more payments. You're multiplying by a bigger number. So those 6-year car loans are scary. Yes. Somebody want to add something?
Okay, I'm going to guess that that's a no. I will erase.
Back to my cursor, I think.
Yes.
All right, so now let's go back. Not that one, to this one. And let's move forward. We got to keep moving. We don't want to be late. Want to be on time. We were here, and I think I'm really almost done.
So here's mortgages, their installment loans, blah, blah, blah. We just did an example like this.
Mortgages do have these extra costs, closing costs, appraisals, surveys. I don't know. They just come up with more and more things. It's in that pile of papers that you're signing over and over again. So
all of those things are make
mortgages more complex than just your standard car loan or whatever.
Last thing that I stuck in my slides.
When you're doing a mortgage, you will have an option between a fixed rate mortgage and an adjustable rate mortgage. The adjustable rate mortgage is frequently called an ARM.
Okay.
And again, I remind you, you're paying more interest at the beginning, less at the end. So here's an ARM, an adjustable rate mortgage. What this means is what you're paying at the beginning is not what you're going to pay later.
You enter into it low, okay? People will take out an ARM mortgage when they can't really afford the mortgage right now,
but they believe that life is going to be substantially better in just a few years,
okay?
Somebody coming out of medical school, just getting started in practice. They're like, okay, I'm not really making much now. I'm just doing my internship. But
I anticipate significant earnings later.
So let's go ahead and get that house. Let's finance it on an ARM. By the time that rate goes up,
I'll be able to afford those larger payments.
So again, it's a form of presuming on the future.
Okay. Where you're assuming something is
going to go a certain way. And if it doesn't, you might be in some trouble.
All right. So in a fixed year loan,
it's 4%. It's always 4%. It's never going to change. In your adjustable rate mortgage, your ARM, you start out at 3%. So less than 4%, you're going to have smaller payments.
Okay. Then
after, you know, so they say you can calculate how much you're going to save in those early years on a $100,000 loan. And then they say, suppose when it goes up to 5%.
Now what's going to happen to you?
So let's just kind of look at the numbers.
So
here we are, $100,000 loan for the first year at 4%. You're going to pay about $4,000. Okay.
The 3%, you're going to pay about $3,000. So by doing that ARM, you saved $1,000 in the first year.
You paid $1,000 less in interest. These are just quick approximations so that we can just look at the effect of this type of a loan. Okay. So if I take that $1,000 that I saved and I divide it by 12, that means I'm probably paying approximately $83 less each month.
So if my circumstances right now are limited,
this helps me keep my house affordable. Okay, but here's the problem with an ARM, okay? You know it's going to move, and there's no guarantee how much it's going to move, okay? You just know it's going to move. So by the third year, the rate goes up to 5%. Now, instead of saving that $83 per month, you're paying $83 more per month, okay? And that's just in year three. And then if it continues to go up, your situation gets worse and worse, okay? Because your payment is getting higher and higher. Now, if you're in a situation where you can refinance your loan and you can go to a fixed interest rate, then fine, you can probably save yourself. If your situation did not get better, and you're not in a situation to do that, then all of a sudden you're stuck with this house payment that keeps going up on you. Every year they raise your rate a little bit more, and things get out of control pretty fast with these. A lot of people in the housing bubble that lost their houses had financed with adjustable rate mortgages, and things had just gone crazy for them, and there was no way. I mean, they said to walk away from their house and abandon it. There was nothing else they could do. And that's a lot of money you've poured into something you thought was going to be a great investment. So these are very, very scary. I want you to understand that an ARM, okay,
that adds the risk to you
as the borrower, okay? It doesn't hurt the bank at all. It hurts you, okay?
So it may be
the only way to get into that house. You may want to think about, then, is this not the time to be getting into that house? Because some pretty scary things can happen if you use this.
All right, let's go ahead and jump
into E, because E is all about taxes and we love paying our taxes, so we should talk about this.
It's sad, but this was actually my favorite part of the practice quiz.
You know, I always tell people, people grumble and complain about paying their taxes, and I really don't. I mean, none of us really likes writing that check or whatever, but I always say, you know, I love roads that are in good condition. I'm a big fan. And I like state parks, and I really appreciate it when I dial 911 and the police and the fire department show up. And, you know, and that's what my taxes are paying for, okay? And I want my parents to be taken care of in their retirement, and I want them to get their Medicare and whatever payments every month. And so, you know, really, I don't begrudge my taxes. I really don't. When I stop and think about what my taxes are paying for, yes, I want all of those things to be paid for, and it's only fair that I pay my share. Now, some people want to argue and fuss about what is my share and what is your share and what's somebody else's share. Another conversation, okay? But in general, I don't have an issue with paying taxes. It's just part of the responsibilities of being a grown-up, okay? So probably a greater percentage of people all the time just pay somebody to pay their taxes, all right? Or, you know, to calculate their taxes and figure it out. And I would fall in that category. Neither my husband nor myself wants to mess with this. So we're like, fine, you know. We have a good Christian friend who's a CPA, and he agrees to do them for us every year, and we send him that check gladly. But I can do these calculations. I just don't want to, okay? But we're going to talk about it. I want you to understand, again, how it works. Be able to do some simple calculations on this, nothing complex. We're not going to start from their income to the end result and have to do it all. So you don't have to memorize this table. Don't go crazy. But your gross income is everything you bring home, okay? And it includes, if you actually have some investments that are earning interest, then that interest is a part of your income, okay? And other things that you might be getting. So everything you get, that's your gross income. When they talk about adjusted gross income.
Wait, real quick question. I think I know the answer, but if the investment is still like wherever it is, like if it's a stock investment and it's still there and it's gaining interest, does that count if you haven't taken it out yet?
No, remember that with stock, you don't really make any money until you sell it.
Got it. So this interest.
This would be more like interest on your savings account, except that interest rates are so low, they don't even send me a statement anymore. I used to get a statement. I used to have to add that to my income tax. And now interest rates are so low, they don't even send me one. They're like, it doesn't matter. And so now you do get to subtract. Notice it says you get to subtract adjustments to your income. Those adjustments would be any money that you're putting into a tax shelter account. Something that you're going to use later, okay? So an IRA, a Roth, something like that. If you're dumping money into one of those every month or every year, whatever, the money that you put in there subtracts out of your gross income
from the top, okay? You don't pay taxes on that. That's the beauty of that.
You're going to pay those taxes later when you're old and poor, okay? And so you'll be in a lower tax rate. It'll be a better deal for you. So that gives you your adjusted gross income.
Just me, but I can't read the slide at all. Like, you can't see the chart.
You can't see these slides?
You can't read the words on them at all.
I can read them.
That's true for you too? I'm sorry. Let me get
No, I said I can read them.
You can read them? Okay. It may have to do with how you have, you know, your, I can't think what they call it. But here, the chart is in your book. I can help you. Page 254 at the bottom of the page. That is the chart we're looking at. So if it is fuzzy on your screen,
Wait, I figured it out. I had to turn it sideways.
You just never know, right? So many things. All right, so then you adjust your gross income by pulling out those things that are tax sheltered. And then you subtract your deductions and your exemptions, okay? So this is where you're happy to have children. That's more exemptions, okay? Everybody in your household counts as an exemption, and so you get to multiply that number. That's great news. Deductions, you have a choice.
You can itemize,
or you can take the standard deduction, but nobody gets to do both, all right?
You must only choose one.
So you want to choose the biggest number, whatever's better for you. That gets you down to your taxable income. It is surprising sometimes how much money you're not paying taxes on. Okay, legally, okay? These are your legal ways to hide some of your income so you don't have to pay
taxes
on it, all right? There's a arrangement for that. Once you get to your taxable income, this is when you go to your tax chart and you figure out how much you're going to have to pay, okay? This is where you start talking about what bracket am I in? What income bracket am I in? And the more money I make, the higher percentage I pay. We have a graduated system, okay? So we'll look some more in a minute at that. And so I calculate that, and then if I have any tax credits, I get to subtract them straight out of there, okay? So if I have a $1,000 tax credit, that means I pay $1,000 less. So the one that a lot of people on the poor end of things may get is called the Earned Income Credit for Children. Okay, if you have young children and you have very little income, you may qualify for the Earned Income Credit. It is a credit. It subtracts right out of what you owe. And sometimes it means instead of owing, you're actually going to get a return. Okay, and it's all because of, you know, where your income level is and the number of dependents that you have. So then you come down to your tax bill. Question? Okay, so after the tax bill, then you look at what did your employer take out for you all year? Because that counts as payments you've already made.
All right. If you are employed, they've been pulling things out of your check,
unless you're like self-employed and then it's all up to you. Okay. You probably make quarterly payments. Or if I'm trying to think what the term is, if you are some kind of labor, then
they don't take out your taxes. You're in charge of your own as well.
But anyway, most of the time, most of us see all this money that gets pulled out of our check every month. So we compare what we owe with what we've already paid in. And depending on how this is, I either get a refund, one or the other. Okay, so we talk about Karen. She's got $38,200 in wages. She received $750 in interest from a savings account. That would have to be a whopper right now. And she contributed $1,200 to a tax-deferred retirement plan. She got one personal exemption, and she had deductions totaling $6,100. So we're supposed to find her gross income, her adjusted income, and her taxable income. Let's walk our way through that. Gross income is everything she brought home, so the $38,200 plus the interest. Here's her gross income. Now, she gets to subtract out of that her $1,200 contribution because that was a tax-deferred retirement plan. So she doesn't pay the taxes on it now. So she subtracts that out, and that gives her her adjusted gross income. There we are. There's that subtraction. Now she's down to $37,750. Now we start talking about her exemptions and her deductions. Okay? She has an exemption, $3,900, and deduction, $6,100. So now she's down to $27,750 at her taxable income. That is what she would pay taxes on. Everybody with me?
Y'all still look alive, so I'm going to go with it.
Yes.
All right. At least I can see your faces now. I know you're still awake in there. Okay, so then how much tax you're going to pay depends upon your filing status. Are you single? Are you married but filing two different returns? Are you married and one return? Sorry, I had those in the opposite order. Or are you a head of household, which means you're unmarried but you do have and are supporting either a parent or a child. It could go either way. It could even be like a nephew and niece or whatever. Okay.
One question I have is why would they be married but file separately?
Occasionally, depending upon your circumstances, it usually has to do with investments and things like that. The year that you get married in particular, it might be to your financial advantage to file separately. Usually it's going to be to your advantage to file jointly. But there could be situations. That's the kind of thing where this is why you might pay an accountant to answer that question. You definitely would not want to pay me anything.
I think some of it has to do as well that you can only claim a certain amount of kids on one tax form.
Right.
If you have more than that amount of kids, you will only get for, let's say, I think it's maybe a maximum of 3 kids. If you have 4 or more, it will be to your advantage to file separately because you can claim all your kids.
I never knew that. Thank you, Christine. That's very interesting. If you have a large family, I guess that would be another reason to do that. And then there's always just some people that they get married, but it's still my money and your money. Thank you very much. We're not mixing our money. And so they might file separately just because that's how they have made a decision to handle their finances.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you're going to always subtract your exemptions and deductions. All right. An exemption is a fixed amount per person in your textbook on page 7. 257. There is the tax chart there, and it shows these 4 categories that you can be in for filing, and it shows you can be in the 10% bracket or the 15% bracket or the 25% bracket, so on and so forth. And then down at the bottom of that table, it tells you how much a standard deduction is and how much an exemption is per person in your household. That will occasionally change from year to year. So whenever you're doing your taxes, you always want to make certain you have the most current information. So we subtract those out. Now, here's this question. How do I decide, should I itemize or should I take my standard deduction? Let's just look at an example to help us understand. Because we're subtracting this out, we want to do whatever is going to let us subtract the most. $2,500 plus $900 plus $250. If you live in Texas, you don't pay state income tax, but most of the United States does, and you always get to subtract your state income tax. And then, I love that. I see you packing. That's a good clue for me. I like it. Your filing status entitles you to a standard deduction of $6,100. So I'm going to add those 3, and I only get $3,650. $6,100 is a lot more than $3,650. So I'm going to choose to take the standard deduction. So that's how you make that decision. All right. So there's that formula chart that's on page 257. Tax credits are more valuable. Remember that one. File it away. If you have a choice, you want a tax credit as compared to a tax deduction. I mean, we'll take both, but this is worth more. All right. The credit is always worth more. All right, I'm just going to skip to the end of this. I don't think any of this is super, it's not different than what's in the book. Some of it's straight from the book. FICA, all that money they take out of your check every month, that's your FICA. That's your Social Security and Medicare taxes. And that's what I want to finish with tonight, is just to encourage you, make certain you read Section F, the last section in this book, or in this chapter. There are no calculations there. There are no calculations, but I'll promise you on my test, there'll be at least one short response essay question. All right? So make sure you read about Social Security and the federal budget and what the government's really doing with the Social Security money that they're hanging on to you right now because, you know, they're spending it long before you're ready to retire. And who knows what they're going to do when it's time for some of us to retire. And they explain it very well in the book, okay? Other than that, remember if you're self-employed, you have to pay twice. I'm sorry to tell you that, but you do. So think long and hard about being self-employed. I think that really covers everything that we need to do for tonight.
Last questions or comments?
Anybody got something they'd really like to throw out there before we're done?
I don't want to hold anyone else, but I did have a question from the practice test before I take the actual, the practice quiz for week 3 before I take the weekly quiz. Is that okay if I ask that right now?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Give me just a minute to do one more thing, and then I'll turn everybody else loose, and you and I can talk about it, and anybody else that wants to listen in can stay. I'll leave it on the recording and whatever, but if you want to leave, you're free to go. I want to point out, in week 2, There is this place that says submit name and contact information for your test proctor. So if I click on that, oh, it's already logged me out. Okay. I think I only see like 4 people have done it. And I think it's because the rest of you are going, well, I'm going to be in class, so I don't need to do this. But I just need to know for sure that you're going to be in class and not just that you just haven't done it. So it says up here, if you plan to take the exam during class, please submit class as your proctor. I really need you to do that, okay? Because if I've got somebody that's just been oblivious and hasn't noticed, I need to know that and I need to prompt them to get a proctor. It's really a bad scramble there in the last week when you're trying to find somebody who can proctor your test. So just make certain, if you're planning on being online and I'm going to watch you and you're going to leave your mic open and your face is going to be on the screen, that's all fine. Put in class, okay? I just didn't have nearly enough entries there. I think that's the only thing I was really concerned about. So you are free to go. Thank you for being a great class again tonight. And if you want to stay, we're going to talk about something from the practice quiz before I stop the recording. All right, what are we going to talk about?
Okay, so Mike, I have written down, I'm not looking at directly because I'm on my iPad talking to you, but ask about comparing the meet in the middle with CDs and savings accounts. So there was a question, let me see if I can pull it up on my phone. There was a question that said something where you had to do both calculations and then at what year would you be able to meet in the middle? I got the question correct because I plugged the numbers in, but
right.
I wanted to know the calculation.
Oh, because you just checked the numbers that they gave you?
I just started plugging the numbers from the four, like it has 4 answers.
Right, exactly.
So I just started plugging them in, but I kind of learned the calculation for it.
See, Hannah, you're an awesome test taker, and I congratulate you. You've grown up in the generation where we've just about tested you to death as you went through school. So if nothing else, you have some great test-taking skills. That is a really good way to do that. And I'm going to say to you that your test is going to be primarily, okay, multiple choice. Okay. The largest part of your test is going to be multiple choice with a little bit of true-false and the beginning section that is short answer, kind of essay-ish like, but very short, you know, like a paragraph at the most that you're writing or typing in for me. And those are more discussion conceptual questions, not anything that you'd be calculating. So actually, you're just fine. I wouldn't mess with it, okay? Take those answers and plug them back in. It's likely an easier calculation than it would be to do it the other way.
Okay, but what about in real life?
What about real life? Okay, so in real life, tell me again what this question says.
It says, hold on, I haven't found it, but it's something about at what year will a CD and savings account meet? Let me get the exact percent. Well, does the exact percentages matter or no?
Yeah, if we're actually going to have to calculate it, yes.
Okay. Like, what would be a situation where I may need this?
I don't know. They're asking you
to make a comparison of 2 different kinds of investments, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so overall, when you're comparing investments, okay?
Well, it's 2 different types of savings accounts. Is that the same?
Yeah, because a savings account is still a very safe way to get my money to earn money,
okay?
Because it's a savings account in a bank, you know, it's guaranteed. Even if they rob the bank, I'm still going to get my money. You know, it's a very, very safe investment. Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to give you,
are they paying 2 different percentages? Are you actually looking at the problem?
I am right now.
Okay. So tell me what the difference is in these 2 accounts.
You just put $25.86 in a CD that is expected to earn 8% compounded monthly and $8,229 in a savings account that expected to earn 4% compounded annually. So I know one of them is monthly, so that means it's going to have to be 12 Like in my exponent, it's going to have to be 12 times X because X is going to be whatever the year is.
Right. I agree. Mm-hmm. And so then are we trying to figure out when they're going to draw about the same amount of money?
Yes. Determine when to the nearest year the values of your two investments will be the same.
Okay. So, like I said, in the context of a test, just plugging your numbers in and testing your answers is far and away the easiest way to do this. Okay. In real life, if I am wanting to compare this, I am going to guess by your nice young face on my screen that you know how to use a graphing calculator. Am I right?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Excellent. Then what you would do is you would take your formula for the first loan and you would put it in Y1.
Okay.
And then you're going to put your formula for the second one in Y2. Then you're going to have to play with the window to get a window where you can see your point of intersection. Or you can be very patient and scroll down your table for, you know, however many years you need to go. Uh-huh. But once you put it in there, if you go to your table, it's going to be year one. This is how much money you have in this one. This is how much money you have in the next one, year two. And you're looking for that point where they're the same,
or okay,
close to the same, okay? I never have much patience with looking at my table, but some of my students love the table, okay? I would look at my graph, and I would just tell, you know, the calculator calculates the point of intersection.
Yeah, so you just need to go, you need to, I'm trying to remember, point of intersection, you have to, does it have, I don't have my graphing calculator in front of me, but isn't there a button that literally you just have to second push that button?
Second and trace brings up your calculate menu, and number 5 is point of intersection. So you just use that feature on your calculator, and it's going to tell you exactly what value of X. So, you know, 20.3 years or 22 point whatever, but it'll give it to you.
Okay. And is that technically algebra then or not?
Kind of, yes. I mean, when we start talking about that, because both of these equations have exponents in it, therefore they're exponential equations. They're growing, they're a curve, okay? And so we've got two different curves going on. One curve is steeper than the other. They had two different starting points on the y-axis because our initial investment was different for the two. And so, you know, if you understand all these things, you can look at this and make a lot of sense. This is where, if you've got a stronger math background, you've got all this algebra, you know, I can talk about all these things with you and this makes sense.
Right.
It's not a requirement in this class, so not everybody that comes to class can understand this conversation at all.
Got it. Okay. Well, thank you for entertaining it anyways. I really appreciate it.
You bet. No, I always like a little intellectual curiosity. That's a good thing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.